Welcome to the Creative South Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Frostholm. Today I talk with illustrator and designer Chad Michael of Chad Michael Studio. We talk about his early career in New York City, the challenges of running a one-man shop, designing liquor packaging, and more, all right after this. I want to thank our friends over at Jack Prints for sponsoring this episode. Whatever you need printed, they can do it. From business cards to banners to t-shirts and even socks, whatever you need, Jack Prints can print it. Right now, Jack Prints is offering these great deals. Business cards as low as $33. Custom banners starting at $23. 25% off all over printed shirts and socks. Jack Prints makes great, affordable stuff for designers like you and I. They focus on quality and customer service and have been loyal Creative South sponsors for years. Why not pick them next time you need stickers, banners, or pocket notebooks printed? Plus, Jack Prints is giving Creative South podcast listeners 25% off all orders over $25 when you use promo code CREATESOUTH17 at checkout. Visit jackprints.com for your next order of stickers, prints, or whatever you need today. We all secretly, and some of us openly, know that we have a deep love for stickers. Whenever we go to Creative South, we come home with a massive sticker haul and we feel like kids again. But why do we have to wait another year for this feeling? Luckily, Slaptastic can give you that feeling each and every month, direct to your mailboxes. Each month, you'll receive a pack of 6 limited edition themed stickers that you can enjoy and share with your friends and family. Head on over to www.slaptastic.com/CS17 and sign up today with a special offer just for you. We've gone through and streamlined the Creative South Podcast Patreon page, cleaning out the excess and making it easier for you to support us. With options starting at just $1 per month, you can help support the podcast and even wind up with some cool Creative South Podcast swag. Every dollar helps cover hosting costs, upgrade equipment, and keep the podcast going. When you become a Creative South patron, you'll get access to exciting Creative South news before anyone else, Creative South podcast stickers and t-shirts. So, please help support the podcast and become a patron over at patreon.com/CreativeSouth.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's good to be here. Thanks for giving me a holler. I'm glad to give you a shout.
You're welcome. I'm excited to talk with you. So where'd you grow up?
Well, born and raised in Texas. So okay. Texan native, 100% through and through. Went to school here. Went to college out in Denton, Texas. And so went to UNT for graphic design. So born and raised in Texas and then... Yeah, and then the story kind of develops after that point. Yeah.
Gotcha. So when you were growing up, were you big into art or were you kind of all around doing all sorts of different things?
Yeah, I was definitely the art kid, quote unquote. I think that's a lot of like, that's a lot of like designer. That's like the typical story as far as like, I you know, when I watch these talks and things where they were always the art kid. And that is right. Very much the path that I was on from when I was like 5 all the way up to now. So when I was younger, it was more about like going with my mom to like Garden Ridge, which is like a Hobby Lobby kind of store, and building stuff for the house, whether it be like wreaths or like stuff for the holidays and things like that. And that's all the stuff I did when I was a kid. And sure. And then working through like junior high and high school, I got into sculpting and I got into metalworking and just making a bunch of obscure crap that no one probably knew what the meaning of it was, but you know, right. I gave it some cool title like, oh, it's chaos. And then it was just some miscellaneous mess of form of like clay and, you know, what metalwork and all that kind of stuff. And then it wasn't until my college, like my freshman year of college is when I found like the graphic design route. And that's kind of like what I fell in love with.
So when you started college, were you planning on doing art or did you kind of like fumble around for the first couple semesters and yes. go, hey, I really like this part.
Yes, definitely fumbled quite a bit. I think I spent this first year I spent not knowing what I wanted to do at all. And it just so happened I was taking, you know, miscellaneous painting courses and figure drawing and all the necessity requirements that they just make you take. Sure. And then I think so after the freshman year, I think so maybe it was more towards sophomore year into freshman year. I discovered that the university I went to had a great graphic design program, what they broadly called communication design, which was a mix of advertising and graphic design and multimedia. And I dove into that, and that's kind of how I fell in love with it. We started with branding projects and typography and things like that. And then where I really fell in love with it was the packaging design class that I had taken when I was towards my end of my sophomore year. And that's where I was like, I fell in love with the print and the tactile quality and just being able to like print something and put it on a shelf and just hold it in my hand. And that's when I moved to, like, after college and I moved to New York, that's where I went with it. It's just like, I want to do packaging. I want to do branding. So, yeah.
Gotcha. Well, what brought you to New York when you left school? Was it a job opportunity or were you just kind of sowing your wild oats?
It was a mix. It was part of the one aspect was my senior portfolio for college. I entered it in a local like Dallas design competition, and I was lucky enough to win top portfolio for the like overall, like I think there were a couple schools competing and stuff like that. And my portfolio had one top portfolio, and then they sent me to New York to just interview at different agencies. So I met with Pearl Fisher and Landor and a few other agencies while I was there, and I fell in love with it. So I came back, immediately packed my bag. It's that cliche story where you're like, you got a backpack, you get on a flight, and you don't own anything, and you just go there and you find a little shitty box to live in, and then you make a life for yourself. And that's what happened. So
there's lots of little shitty boxes up there. So,
yeah. I lived in a few. That's for sure. Yeah.
So where did you end up? Where did you end up working straight out of college?
Straight out of college, I moved to New York and I worked at a place, a very small startup, because I just didn't know where to look. And I took the first job I found. It was a place called Little Fury. And they actually do great work, and it's just run by two girls, and they do a lot of branding for larger corporations, larger products, things like that, a lot of web-based design. And so I had worked there for a couple months, and then I got an offer from a company in New York called Stranger and Stranger, and I had admired their work for a long time. And it was all packaging based, and I didn't know I wanted to do the liquor thing specifically until I started working at that agency. And then, so it took my love for packaging and my love for making a niche out of it. And just, who doesn't enjoy a good spirit in general? And, I fell in love with it, and that's kind of where it all went. So it was Little Fury and then Stranger and Stranger. And then after that, I just kind of, I worked there for 2 years and became a lead designer, and then went out on my own, and that's how it went.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So what was the, what decision made you decide to go out on your own?
Well, I think a large part of it was all these agencies I worked for, you know, you put in your dues and you put in your time and you're cranking out concepts against, you know, a very tight deadline, and you're doing it on a wide scale. So you're doing 10 or 12 projects a month, and really like maybe two of those make it to print. And I spend so much time on the work that I do, and I, you know, whether for strategy and conceptual thinking and, you know, the actual design and then how it's going to be printed, for some of that stuff, for, you know, 80% of that stuff to not make it, because sometimes companies just want to see, hey, we have an idea, we'll pay you just to see what it looks like, even though they know they're not going to do anything with it. And that took a little piece out of me every time. And
I can understand that.
Yeah. And so I was just like, okay, well, I need a change. And I kind of wanted to make a name for myself and start something very small and have a studio to where I was more selective about the work I took on. That way I could get the time I did spend, the projects I did spend that time on would probably most likely make it to print. And so that's why I decided to go out on my own. And that's why I left kind of working for larger agencies.
And then you left, and then you moved back to Texas, correct?
Mm-hmm.
You moved back to the Dallas area?
Yeah, well, shortly after, I left Stranger, and then I started to do the freelance thing in New York. And I worked for that companies I mentioned earlier. I actually worked for Landor as a creative director. It was actually a weird made-up position because they knew I didn't want to work full-time there, so they made me freelance creative director. And so I had a spot in this office that it was, they gave me a desk and business cards I never use, and an office that was just, it was just a chair and I never went in. It was just a blank spot that I could sit there if I wanted, but I worked from home, and it was a really casual relationship. And I had gone to, like, I was part of the meetings and stuff like that. So even though I was freelancing, I came in and met with clients there, which was really beneficial to learn that, you know, that back end, because when I worked for Stranger, I didn't do a whole lot of client face to face. And with Landor being the freelance quote unquote creative director, they gave me this opportunity to, you know, run meetings and meet with some of these big liquor big wigs. And I still did the liquor thing while I was there. And so I worked for Landor, and I was doing that thing. And then all of a sudden in my free time, I was freelancing for Port Fisher, and all these projects were liquor based. So I had done, I worked for Crown Royal, Wild Turkey. I worked on some stuff for Tawaka. And then I moved back, and I was just like, okay, I'm done with agencies. I just want to work directly with the client and just have that relationship. And then I moved back to Texas and started my little design studio out of my, yeah, it was a loft at that time. And then now I'm moving up slowly, very slowly. Yeah.
So, you know, you mentioned when you kind of, when you left Stranger and Stranger, you know, doing the freelance creative at Landor and all.
Yeah.
And you were building up kind of client relations at that point. Had you really not had that much experience with it at all when you were at Stranger and Stranger?
No, not at all, really. With Stranger and Stranger, it was more of a lot of it was done internally, and they had people that were responsible that were not really designers that were responsible for handling those presentations and pitching the work that we had created.
And, sure, like account executives.
Yeah,
and stuff.
Exactly. And so I didn't really have a lot of face to face with clients, and so it was more of I was, you know, doing design pitches and concepts and just sending them off, and hopefully some of them took flight, and I didn't really see much after that happened. So yeah, there wasn't a lot of that, and I'm glad I worked at the Landor and Pearl Fisher because it really gave me a lot of the foundational elements I needed to start my own studio.
Did that give you the confidence that you could kind of do it yourself and find your own clients and build that?
Yeah. Yeah. And I didn't jump, you know, just feet first into it without having something beforehand. So I had set up a small client base before I left Landor and Pearl Fisher. But yeah, it definitely helped me out and gave me the tools I needed to, you know, meet with these clients and know how to present and know how all that functions in order to, you know, start my own thing and do it myself.
Yeah. So when you start your own thing, you know, like you said, you had a few clients under your belt. But how did you go about finding new clients and finding new work? Or was it just kind of coming to you through word of mouth?
Yeah. I mean, I was lucky enough to, the way I started my studio is I created hypothetical projects because I actually wasn't allowed to show any of the work I'd done at any of the agencies because either NDA or, you know, it just wasn't out yet and I couldn't show it. And so I had to create essentially a portfolio from scratch, and I knew I wanted to live in the liquor world. So the things I had done to kind of gain exposure and, you know, have people know that I was out there, I did a hypothetical project where I launched my own white whiskey spirit and actually printed it and sent it out to clients and people I didn't even know just to like get it out there. I sent it out to How Magazine and CA and all that stuff. And the response was overwhelming. It was really great. And I think that's kind of what jumpstarted me was doing these projects that no one was paying me to do, but showing people what I was capable of. So it's called Perminio, and I think it's still on my site now. I made 300 bottles of it, and I still have 100 bottles left. So I think I'll carry those bottles with me for years and years to come.
Are those bottles actually filled with white whiskey?
They are not. I put little labels on the bottom that says "Do not drink" because the first I think 100 were just water. They're just for like, you know, bookshelf kind of decor or, you know, a good paperweight. And the second round, I was like, I felt like I did get a couple emails that said, "Oh, I drank it and it's water. What's happening here?" So the next batch, I just went and bought a whole bunch of whiskey, essentially white rye whiskey is like a moonshine, went and bought a bunch of it and bottled it myself and then sent out the last 100 with actual goods in it. But most people didn't end up drinking it, I think. So.
Well shine. No, that doesn't sound. It'll put some hair on your chest.
It will. It'll take the paint off a car. That's for sure.
Yeah.
So, you know, through this process, you're building up client base. How do you start kind of formulating a style? Because you definitely have a distinctive style.
Yeah, you know, I've heard that and I've grown to realize that. But at first, I didn't. I mean, I still kind of, I feel like my work's very diverse. But I guess it has like an inherent like foundation of like vintage made new kind of thing. Right. I've heard that a lot and I see that now. And I just think it comes from a just an inherent place, just what comes out of me. It's what I enjoy doing. So I don't know if I didn't really work to kind of like, I was like, oh, I saw something. I was like, this is my style now. It just kind of came out of me and this, it's what happened. And so I'm actually pushing myself a bit further now to do work that's much more out of that zone. That way when new clients come to me, they don't have expectations as far as like, ooh, I know it's going to be black and gold and it's going to have vintage cool typography and it's going to be very ornate.
Lots of filigree.
Yes. Yeah, you got it. So I'm trying to like break out of that. And I have some stuff coming out this year. It's like baby blue and it's pink and it's full of like, you know, girly bedazzled elements that people would not expect of me anyway. So
now if you actually bedazzle a bottle, I will be impressed.
Yeah, I may do it. Hand bedazzling. Yeah. Only a limited run of 100 bottles because they're so time intensive.
Yeah. Yeah. So with that style, I mean, you say that kind of came out of you naturally, but it's very intricate and it looks like it's very time consuming to kind of build that. How are you process wise? How do you go through building that?
Well, I mean, every project's different.
Sure.
But, you know, in speaking in generalities, I would say it's I do a heavy amount of research. You know, I never design in isolation, I guess. So I surround myself with whatever the strategy of that project is. For instance, I'm working on a cigar box right now that's inspired by old Bibles. And so
interesting.
Because the cigar blend is about 15 years old. And so it was essentially left in a dark room for 15 years and we call it the resurrection blend. So it ties in with the cathedral kind of look. And so a lot of the inspiration there was old Bibles. So I went out and bought a bunch of Bibles, found them on eBay. And so my desk right now is covered in like old Bibles and things of book plates and things of that nature. So
if someone breaks into your house, they're going to think you're a religious zealot.
Yeah. They might freak out and leave because just the Bibles itself are probably overwhelming enough, but I have a lot of skulls and things like that in my office. So
he's starting his own cult.
Yeah. There's just no salt pentagram on the floor. That's aside from that, it's very kind of a old and speakeasy, mysterious kind of vibe in there. So yeah, after the research and all that, I often start with typography. So I pull a lot of my inspiration still. I think I'll always do that from like vintage ephemera, stuff from the Gaslight era, because I think it's just that's a time when craft was, in terms of design, was at its best. I mean, there was no computers and people were doing it all by hand. Every illustration is done by hand and then pressed into paper. And then, so I pull a lot of love and a lot of inspiration from that era. And then I just build and evolve until it separates itself enough to become something unique and different. Mm-hmm. And then, so usually working with type in the beginning and then, you know, adding an illustration if necessary. I'm always working against the bottle design itself. So I'll work up a vector bottle of whatever the spirit is and whatever that we've kind of selected together. And I'll work against that. And then it's just a constant tinkering and, you know, packing stuff, taking stuff away, and just copy and pasting, you know, the concept over and over and over again until and while working on it until it gets to the place where you get this gut feeling and you're like, oh, this is new. This is kind of different. I haven't seen this before. And that's where it kind of ends up. Yeah.
So do you have like a library of kind of like ornamentation and things like that you rely on, or are you custom making all of that filigree and stuff yourself?
Oh yeah. I feel like it's cutting a corner if you were to like use Shutterstock. And I think a lot of designers and stuff, when you use like pre-made ornamentation, people realize that that's a pre-made element and they're like, oh, I've seen that before, it looks too mechanical. So I do I almost always do all my ornamentation by hand. And when I say by hand, I always work on the computer, but it always starts with a single line. And I'm just building out from there and twisting and turning, copy pasting, reflecting things to see what happens. But yes, always custom ornamentation for sure.
Okay. Well, that's why I was wondering if, like, because you do so much of it, I wasn't necessarily thinking like Shutterstock, but like you were, I was wondering if you were building out
elements
that like personal files that you use and then kind of reuse and mix and match things to.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes I'll do that. And it's amazing what, like, I don't like to repeat myself in terms of ornamentation, but I can take ornamentation that I've done for another job and, you know, give it different leaves and different little tiny bits, and they look totally distinct from one another. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, so sometimes that's a way to do it. I do pull things from the past sometimes from existing files that I've done, but it's always from a place of like, it started authentically at one point.
Sure.
Yeah. Even if I'm regurgitating it now. So. Yeah.
Sure. Well, I mean, I think everybody customizes stuff, and I'm sure at some point in your life you've used stock stuff that you've bought off somewhere for things too. Yeah. Just like everybody has. And then you kind of go in and you tweak it and customize things.
Yeah.
So that's different. I think everybody does that.
Yeah.
But yeah, just because your stuff is so distinctive and has so many different working elements to it. Mm-hmm. I was just, you know, literally thinking production wise of how long that takes you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it really, some projects come a lot faster than others. And so I've done projects that are very illustrative and detail and typography. It'll come in, you know, a couple weeks. And then I've had some that I work on. I just can't seem to like, I don't get that feeling of like, it's finished. And I'll work on a project for months and months and months, even if the clients approved it. and I still don't, cause I don't want to put something out there that I'm not excited about. Or that I don't feel is like the best it could possibly be. So I'll work on it. I'll just tell the client, hey, can I just, you know, maybe I don't feel like this is 100% there yet. And they don't care. They're just like, oh yeah, just keep going with it. If you feel like it needs to be. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, you mentioned, you know, working with clients and all, and from what I gathered, you're doing more than just the label design. You're meeting with clients and helping them pick out like actual bottles and things like that. And
yeah, it's a huge learning curve.
I was about to say, how does that work, and how do you learn about that?
Well, I mean, because a lot of the stuff I do now, I maybe touched on when I was at agencies, but I didn't learn about it wholeheartedly. So doing custom, because I handle everything. I handle, you know, the label design and the bottle design, whatever that may be, and then print production, and then everything that kind of goes along with that, business cards, collateral, shipper boxes, and every project I kind of learn a little something new, because every time it's not necessarily a step and repeat kind of formula for spirit design. Right. Some people want custom bottles. Some people want a bottle in an individual carton, or they don't care and they want to put it in a shipper carton. So it's just working with manufacturers and showing them a visual. And I mean, that's how it started anyway. And then, you know, just kind of learning the back and forth. So the next job, I'm a little bit more educated, and it's just a everyday kind of thing. Just learning something new, just teaching myself, you know.
How does one go about designing a custom bottle? And my brain doesn't even process in that space.
So it's a lot less complicated than you probably think. I mean, you have to have some education in like bottle structure and like how, like if you're working with a 750 milliliter bottle, like kind of, you got to have to know about how much, what the size is to hold that volume in terms of like bottle height and width, but very raw. So it mostly breaks down to my contribution to custom bottle design is I'll work up a custom bottle design. So create the custom shape, and I'll show the client the front, the side, and maybe the bottom or the back if it has special embossing or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then from that point, if they say, hey, yeah, this is awesome, let's send it to the manufacturer, I just send those visuals to the manufacturer and they figure out all the math. That's not – I don't handle that part.
That's what I was wondering about, because you know, like most art majors, math is not always our strong suit.
Nah, not at all. Yeah.
I mean, I actively avoided math when I was in college.
So. Right. Yeah, I understand that. It was not my favorite subject, that's for sure.
No, I like to tell people that I took one math class in college that was statistics, and I got a D in it, and I was really happy with that D.
Yay! Yeah.
Because it meant I passed.
Right. And it was over, and you did it. You don't have to do it again.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I have never used it since.
Yeah, me neither. So when the technical drawings come back of bottles based on visuals I've sent off, I'm just pretty much like looking at it like it's Braille. I'm like, oh, yeah, those numbers look right. Cool. And so they'll produce what they call a lucite, which is it's a plastic mold, a sample of that bottle. And then you get to see it in real time before you hit the go button. So if you need to make any tweaks in between, then you definitely can. And those guys know what they're doing. Like they're not ever going to provide you a bottle that is lopsided or, you know, doesn't hold the proper volume or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's their job. That's what they're hired to do. So always have 100% faith and trust in these guys.
Gotcha. So, you know, with building these and building, you know, custom bottles and, you know, all the custom packaging facets, how are you managing your time on that? Are you like taking on one client at a time? Or, I mean, financially, that doesn't seem like it makes sense to take on one project at a time. But
yeah, it depends on the client, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, you know, obviously there are some big giant, leaders in the spirits industry that own, you know, 80% of the market. And so if you work for them, you could probably just work on that project for a month or two and feed yourself and, you know, live and keep the lights on. But most often, I cycle between three or four projects in maybe a month or two span. And once I wrap up one, I'll usually look at inquiries or I kind of like book out months in advance. But it's always about three or four projects at one time because I'm just one guy and there's a lot of facets to each project and I don't want to overwhelm myself by any means. I want to live and, you know, travel and, you know, enjoy life. Not that I'm not enjoying it when I'm designing, but, you know,
but
what I mean?
Actually be able to like step away from the computer.
Yeah, exactly.
Go pick up those branches in your yard.
Yeah. Clean up my front yard, mow my yard, my brand new yard I've never had before. And, you know, just enjoy the outdoors. So.
Gotcha. Well, yeah. Cause I was wondering about that. Cause those timeframes, those seem like fairly time intensive projects that can stretch on for a while.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, you know, when you're scheduling your time out, how do you book things? How do you segment it off?
As I was saying, I think we spoke about it earlier, I have to be really selective about the projects I take on because if I feel like they're not going to work out or the client's not serious about it in some way enough, or, you know, if I don't feel that passion coming off of him, then, you know, I can't be as passionate about it. So I'm selective in that sense where, you know, if I feel like it's a strong, stable project, you know, I'll bring it on. And it's just kind of a Lego game. You just got to kind of know you got to take on smaller projects with the larger ones. And then you're just cycling those out. It's a bit of a game for sure.
Sure. How far out do you plan?
Well, I have some clients that plan differently. Some that don't, like, if they'll come to me now and say, hey, we're not looking to do anything until, you know, 5 months from now, but we're looking to book you. And then, you know, I'll book them, of course. So it just depends on their schedule a lot too, but it's often, it's often 2 to 3 months. If I get to 4 months really, and I'm booked up for 4 months, I won't take on any more work. And I'll just be like, hey, cause I don't like to book out too far. Cause you never know what's the future is going to bring. I mean, I might break a hand or something and then,
let's hope not.
Yeah, I know. and then I'm stuck with, you know, like 10 clients backed up or something like that. I always give about each project, the time of a start date to the time of me delivering a file. It's usually 3 to 4 weeks. And that also depends on, you know, if they are doing if they do want to see multiple concepts, that probably extends that timeline. But most often I pitch single concept jobs. So with the amount of time and the strategy beforehand that I put into each one, I find that it's better that to just invest all your time into one direction.
Sure.
And hopefully that works out with the initial pitch. And sometimes it doesn't. But, you know, that's when you go back to the drawing board.
Sure. Yeah. How are you getting clients to buy in on that kind of single pitch, single concept idea? Because I know a lot of designers struggle with that. So
yeah, I mean, you wouldn't. I don't know. I mean, to buy in on it, I think the one of the things I do beforehand is I think what a lot of design studios do, and that's the mood board. So sure. That's writing, you know, it comes with a strategic write-up and a board of visuals. And my visuals aren't just inspirational images of other design work. They're like, you know, materials or, you know, places or scenery. It's very broken down and meticulous, and I feel like they have a very strong idea about what to expect. So when I do pitch them the initial design, it definitely fits in that world that they've agreed to. And so that's how I kind of feel like I get away from it, get away with it a little bit with the single concept design, is because there's so much strategy and back and forth with questionnaires and speaking to the client beforehand that I feel like they have a picture painted with the discussions we have about what to expect.
So, sure. Yeah. So with all of your pieces, they very much feel like they have a story behind them.
Yes.
Yeah. Which I'm assuming is kind of a goal.
Yeah.
How are you helping craft that story, and how much are you contributing to that? How much are you taking from clients? Things like that.
Yeah. Well, I feel like a design isn't really super successful unless it tells a story, whether it be visually or literally or a combination of both. And so, you know, I'm always working back and forth with the clients I pick on, because it's a direct relationship. Like they're super excited about it. I'm super excited about it. So if they have a story whether they've actually made up the story behind the liquor project, or it's an actual like true story, like, you know, their great grandfather's recipe and they started it and they're continuing that tradition. But I always go back and forth with copy or extending that story. I like to write copy a lot. And I think you see that in a lot of my work. I'll pitch it and, you know, if they like it, great, they keep it. If not, I'll, you know, try 5 or 10 more lines, just because I want to say something really weird and really unique on the designs that, you know, I kind of put out there. One of the ones recently that I had done that I had a real blast working on is called Hopes and Dreams. And it's a bourbon that it's the one of the first of its kind that makes fun of all like the craft move, like that whole craft movement of like small batch and, you know, filtered through diamonds or all that ridiculous stuff that people are seeing in the liquor store.
Sure.
And this guy came to
which
me.
Which is usually not craft brew beer or craft brewed bourbon. It's
right.
Owned by somebody else and they're putting a small batch label on it.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of false claims on there. And I mean, you can get away with it and people usually don't research into it. I mean, there's a lot of like great small like craft brands out there, but there's a lot of, if not just much more, that are totally lying about what they're saying.
Sure.
So this guy came to me and he said, "Hey, I got an idea. It's called Hopes and Dreams. The backstory isn't 100% solidified, but we kind of just want to make fun of everything that's going on." And I said, "Oh, that sounds awesome." So I ran more with that one than I do with as far as the backstory goes and a lot of other brands. Sure. And I just came up with a story. I was like, "Hey, man, like, what if Hopes and Dreams is about you did start trying to do this and you gave up, and you just openly let everyone know you're letting someone else do the job and you're just bottling it." And so the label says things like Hopes and Dreams, it's old enough, it's made in large batches. It's from randomly selected barrels. So everything is just, goes against all the other language that you see out there. So with that story, you know, it was more like, "Hey, what if you have a distillery that burned down?" And that's where the kind of the icon on this pack, on this package design came from. It burned down and you essentially just gave up, threw in the towel, and you hired someone else to do it. And that was the main story from it. So, yeah, I mean, it's just copywriting and storytelling is a big thing for me. I feel like if it doesn't do those things, then it just falls short a little bit, even if it looks really pretty.
Sure. So when did you discover that you actually liked writing copy?
Well, I actually did a lot of creative writing like in high school, and I did a lot of short story writings and poetry, and I've always enjoyed just doing, I guess, what do they call it? Stream of consciousness, where you just write. So I enjoy doing that. So I've always enjoyed like just the writing part of it. And I think that's just, I found an opportunity luckily to take design, copywriting, storytelling, and put it together, which is, you know, makes for the best results, I think.
I'm jealous of you on that. I like the concept of writing, the process of writing.
Yeah.
is so painful for me that I just, I mean, I can write a press release.
Right.
But those aren't exactly exciting.
Right.
When it comes to ad copy and all, though, I feel like I have no creative bone left in my body when it comes to stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it just, I always freeze up.
Yeah. It's, it seems like it's something that's just acquired over time for sure.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, you know, we kind of mentioned early on that, you know, you're trying to break out of the mold that people have kind of put you in and yeah. see you as.
Right.
You know, what does that look like for you?
So I think down the road, I'm getting away from the, first of all, the like I started, my studio branding is black and gold. That's the,
sure.
the two very first things I had done, which is my personal business card, which had gained a lot of attention, which was great. And then Prominio, that white rye whiskey, is very much black, gold, you know, dark colors, dark. And I had, that's always those, just the dark side of things has always been like inherent in me. You know, as I said, I like, you know, skulls and I like black and I like vintage medieval books and all kinds of stuff like that. So for me to get away from that, I need to jump as far. I just need to get away from that color palette in general, because a lot of my inquiries now, people are like, hey, I want a black and gold something, or I want a black and gold this. And I'm like, I just don't want to do it anymore. So I think getting away from that.
And everything looks the same at a certain point.
Yeah, at a certain point, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I'm getting away from that and the heavy detail. And I'm trying to stray more towards, I think a lot of the stuff I do now is quote unquote weird. I think it breaks norms for like what you see in that typical category, whatever it may be. But just getting away from that, using more vibrant colors, unexpected patterns, maybe typography that doesn't look like it's vintage, you know, like tall condensed faces that are cropped off. And so I'm really trying to see how far I can push myself and see how, see what else that will lead me to. So yeah, we'll see. I'm working on a rum brand right now that is the complete opposite of a lot of stuff in my portfolio, which I'm excited about. Super vibrant, very, very loud, bold colors, a lot of floral elements that aren't like vector details. It's more illustrative.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we'll see. But that's where we're going.
So with the more illustrative stuff, is that something you've done before? Or is that, you know, new to you?
Yeah, I think I've, you know, just as doing from a simpler standpoint when it comes to illustration, doing like the logo and vector design, I've done that forever. Sure. It's just like branding and, you know, iconography and, you know, just simple logo marks and badges and stuff. So I've done that type of illustration, if you want to call it illustration, for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to like, because this is, I try to personify myself as a larger studio than I actually am, and take on all these different
don't
projects.
We all?
I know, right? So I love that call when like they're like, hey, can I speak to, or they ask me how many people are in my team, or like they say when I get an email inquiry, they're like, oh, nice to meet you all. It's like, oh, it's just me. It's just me over here. But when it comes to illustration, I do handle some of it myself, but then at the same time, I encounter a lot of styles that I'm not capable of. So there are like, you know, like woodcut or engraving, those styles take 20, 30 years to master. And sometimes, you know, they're not mastered very well, or they're mastered exceptionally. But so what I'll do is for clients, if the project feels like it needs like an engraving or a portrait done that is a style I'm not capable of, I'll bock it together and get it approved. And then I'll work with an illustrator to bring that to life. So that's kind of how I tackle the more intense stuff where you see, let me think of a example. If I have one on my site. Slane Irish Whiskey is a whiskey that I had done just come out. And the barrels on there, I had pitched the concept of the three barrels, and it's in a woodcut engraving style. And so I worked with an illustrator to kind of to bring that to the forefront and make it look good, not all choppy. So
I completely understand. So you know, getting into that, you know, when you're working with outside vendors and things like that, well, let me back up.
Yeah.
How did you become comfortable with the business side of it? Because again, the business side, it's, you were an art major.
Yeah.
You know, the business side isn't generally something that comes to us naturally.
Right. No, you're quite right. It's still something I'm learning. It's not my favorite part at all. you know, every day is just like, I think for the first year I was discovering how to work QuickBooks. So if you're speaking, if you're speaking to like that kind of the business side of things, sure, like the financial and things like that, I mean, man, there's stuff coming out every year. I'm just like, oh, I didn't know how to pay that. So it's a constant like learning thing. But, yeah, I mean, it's just a lot of teaching myself and then, you know, keeping it small. I feel like if I were to start bringing more people on, that it would just increase, it would make the business side a lot more difficult. So that's why I stay small. It just makes it easy on me.
Sure.
So, I mean, and as far as, is that what you're speaking to when it comes to business, is like setting up the actual like business and the finances and handling that, the management side?
Yeah. Yeah. Cause that's the tough part for most of us creatives is balancing those two things and handling it.
Yeah. I think I spend, I would say the way I kind of structure my day helps me kind of figure that part out and helps, you know, me do it correctly, which is the first part of the day is, you know, answering emails and making sure all my expenses have been categorized and making sure my QuickBooks is up to date and I've been paid and I'll send out invoices and I'll do all that most of the day in the morning. And then I'll eat lunch and my brain will be on finally. Cause my brain usually doesn't turn on till like 2 PM and then I'll work till like 9 or 10 at night.
Gotcha.
So
despite what the business hours on your website say,
right? Yeah. Yeah. I go over those a lot. Those are just times that they can call me. So
fair enough.
Yeah.
So, you know, the other business aspects that come with running things of handling social media and that self-promotion and, and how did you get comfortable with that?
Well, I'm limited. I don't do a lot of the only social media I think I really do is I have a Facebook, but I'm not on. I am on Twitter, but just for the sake of saving my handle. And then I think Instagram is my heavy thing. So I have like a formula for every project I do. So because most of the stuff that I work on actually does make it to print. So, you know, once it's printed, I'll get the bottles, I'll photograph them, and then I'll post the Instagram and the project on the side simultaneously. And I think it's just come like it's part of it. Like Instagram is like, that's how I get actually a lot of my work. And I'm glad it's a free flat platform or I'd be broke because, you know, that thing has done wonders for me. So I'm glad I don't have to pay for it like every post or something like that. So, I mean, that's usually like, you know, that's kind of how I handle that side as far as promotion goes is just Instagram and then crossing my fingers and hoping that work continues to come in. So,
sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, in that process, you know, you've won a lot of awards and you've been mentioned in a lot of publications and stuff too. So I imagine there's a lot of time that you spend submitting for stuff like that to kind of help bolster things.
Yeah.
How long does that take you?
I do it during the award submissions and things like that. I find to be really beneficial because I do get feedback from it as far as like, I'll find someone that will like have reached out to me and say, hey, I saw your work in CA, you know, let's work together or, you know, something like that. And so I usually handle that stuff at night, but the way I kind of do it is I have bookmarks for all the design competitions that I enjoy submitting to. And I do everything pen to paper when it comes to, calendars and things like that. And so I have a book and I'll write all the deadlines for every single design competition that I want to submit to. And I usually do it that day. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So, and I lost my train of thought there. I found an edit point.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, with all of these aspects, you're doing all the creative, you're handling all of the business side, you're finding new clients.
Yeah.
Account management and all that. When do you find time for yourself? When do you find that time to relax?
I would say the first 2 years, I didn't really. I was always going. And I think over the past, you know, maybe it was probably only been the past 6 months, I've found like it to be necessary to get away. So now I do take on, you know, 3 to 4 clients. But I think in the beginning, I took on as many as I could take on. So I think the first year and a half or so was a lot more overwhelming, and now I'm learning to wind myself down a bit and take off, you know, Saturday is my day to not do anything. Sure. So that's the time I spend with my fiance, or, you know, I go to the dog park. So I definitely do have days where I don't do anything. And those days have become incredibly important to me. And then I'll do a lot of traveling and stuff. So when I do travel, I will take a laptop, and I might tinker and work here and there, but you know, I can't help it. You got to kind of do that when you're running a studio that's seems bigger than it is. You got to answer client sure. emails, even if you're away. So yeah, that's kind of how I find between all the things, you know, I just make the time. It's just necessary. Gotcha. Yeah.
So if you're taking a vacation, do you book like a year out of, all right, this week I'm taking this week off.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go backpack through Europe or whatever.
Yeah. I'm more, spontaneous. Business aside, I like to plan when it comes to business and, you know, clients sure. and deadlines and things. But when it comes to traveling, I'm really bad at planning that kind of stuff. So I'll just most often I'll book a flight and then I'll find an Airbnb, and I'll do it like the week before, cause I feel like I need to get away. And so, I'll do it like immediately and with haste. But yeah, I mean, I just try to pepper it in. If I see like a down period coming, and I'm like, okay, I only have like one client that really might need some stuff between now and this time, I'll go and leave for a little while.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So I meant to ask you this a while back and I forgot, but you know, since you're a one man studio and you're mm-hmm. doing everything else, how are you recharging your batteries as far as creatively, interacting with other creatives, you know,
yeah.
bouncing ideas off people to kind of get feedback from that end?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the things that I do to keep myself going, one is, in the morning I feel like I can't work properly unless I do some form of exercise. And sure. so I'll exercise in the morning and it gets my brain going, and I have like a very strict routine that I'll handle in the morning. And that really helps me get pumped up for the day ahead. And then to keep me going as far as, you know, creatively and talking with other people and having that collaborative because when you're working by yourself, it can get lonely. I mean, shit, the first year I was working by myself, I was like I was battling with depression a bit, because it's like you're sitting in a closet all day, really just like on a computer. And I was so used to working with people all the time and having that back and forth. And, and then it was just gone when I went freelance. So in order to combat that, there's a lot of things in Dallas that are design centric. So you'll have a lot of design studios, myself, and then, you know, a lot of people that I actually interned for when I was in college, and we'll get mm-hmm. together and we'll talk shop and do all that kind of stuff. And they have a Dallas award shows, down in these parts that are big for, this Texas area. And so that's a good time to mingle and meet people and just, you know, shoot the shit and hang out. And I think that's how I kind of just keep it going. And there's not a lot of as far as bouncing ideas back and forth, I don't do that a lot. I think actually the person that helps me with that the most is my fiance. She's like my, I consider her like my creative director sometimes, because she'll just walk by or always be showing her stuff. And I'm like, hey, does this look good? And she's gotten to a point, because we've been together for a long time, like almost 10 years. Mm-hmm. She's gotten to a point where she's very good at it, actually. I think she could do it for a living. And so she's the person I like bounce ideas off most often, because she's her, my dog, and we just kind of like we have a little powwow. So, yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah, because it can be tough working in that vacuum. Like you said, you can go through those bouts of depression because you're not surrounded by other people. And
yeah,
you go through that lack of interaction with human beings.
I know. It's something you need. You got to have it. And so I think just getting out, you know, whether it be travel or, you know, randomly taking a trip or participating in your local kind of design events or whatever it may be, I think is really important if you're a freelance designer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So when you were coming up, what's the advice you wish you'd gotten?
Oh man. I would say, well, one of the first things, you know, that I do tell when I do talks at, you know, different colleges and things, I know I've heard a lot of college students say, I'm going to do freelance, like right out of school. And that's one thing that I would definitely advise against. And I mean, you gotta work in a real setting and, you know, have the whip cracked at you, you know, and like work on 1 day timelines or 3 hour timelines even. And you got to learn that there's just so many things that a real world agency will teach you that universities don't have the time to do. I mean, there's just, And so I would always recommend doing that. I mean, if your plan is to go freelance, work for an agency for a couple of years first. See if that's what you really want to do. I would say probably another point of advice is just as far as a design process and getting your creativity going is not to design in isolation, as I was talking about earlier.
Sure.
So surround yourself in the workspace that you work in with, like, you know, things you love and prints from other designers. And I know it sounds like an 80-year-old woman, but I go antique shopping a lot. So like I have like little trinkets and things, you know, might apply to, you know, bottle design or a box I'm creating. So I like to surround myself with stuff like that. So I would definitely suggest always having your space creatively full with inspiration.
Yeah, I don't think antiquing is isolated to 80-year-old women anymore.
Oh, okay.
I know far too many designers that
go hunting.
They may not call it antiquing, but...
Yeah, oh, that's true. Maybe my phrase is outdated.
I think everybody I know calls it junking or something like that.
That sounds better. That sounds more hip. I like that. Junking.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm horrible about it because I don't do that much. Mm-hmm. My wife loves to. My wife's a designer as well.
Yeah.
And she loves that sort of stuff.
Right.
And I go in there and I'm just like, this is old stuff nobody wanted. Can we get away from it?
Like, this is all crap. Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't bring this home. Yeah.
I mean, half the places around here are like the back room of a Goodwill store.
Right. Yeah.
So it's like you can just feel how dirty it was.
Right. Or it's broken or just like it's literally stuff no one wants. Yeah, I gotcha.
Yeah. So the sifting through all of the crap to find that little nugget of gold
is right.
Not worth it to me.
Yeah. I mean, that's just where I like, because I find a lot of stuff. I feel like I've seen almost... I don't want to say, I mean, I haven't seen everything online, but I feel like I've seen all the vintage inspiration my folders are packed on my desktop. And the only way I'm able to like find new and find something like, oh my God, I've never seen this done this way before is going out myself and doing that hunting, which I think Aaron Draplin, that's what he calls it, you know, going on the hunt or whatever it may be. So, I mean, I think that's really important. I think all designers should do that. I'm sure, as you said, like a lot of them probably do that already.
A lot that I know do.
Yeah. And that's good.
And I've talked to Draplin and he's the same way. He absolutely loves it.
Yeah. It's amazing what can happen when you find like a book or something of vintage typography that has a beautiful gold leaf cover and like what comes out of that from that inspiration. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'll base work I do off a specific, like, oh, I found this. I want to do something like this. And I'll base it off that, whatever that design may be, but I'll work it so many times and evolve it that it bears no resemblance to where it began. But if I wouldn't have found that original piece, I wouldn't have ended up with what I have over here, you know? So.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's how a lot of people work. Yeah. I know that's how I work generally. Right. Is, you know, what's the expression? There's no original ideas anymore.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're seeing things and being inspired from them and building on them and making it your own.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Cool. Well, we're getting close to our time, but I wanted to ask you what exciting is coming up for you?
Oh, I got some, stuff a-brewing. I've recently branched out from the liquor, world, the spirit world. Mm-hmm. As I said, like diversify, you know, do things that are a little different. And, I took on a cigar client recently, and so I'm doing a limited edition for them. And that's why I was talking about the cathedral, like Bible inspired. The rum I mentioned, there's a couple cannabis clients that are coming in. So that's a whole, that opens up a whole other demographic. Yeah. So I think
remind them not to send samples to Dallas. It's still illegal there.
Yeah. Yeah. Not through the mail. Yeah. One day I'll come home and get this big box that smells like reefer and all my neighbors are, you know, like, what's that giant smell? Yeah. So I'll have them not send anything.
Explain that one to the cops.
Yeah, I know. I'm not sending anything my way, that's for sure. A lot of cannabis clients are coming in. Cold brew, staying in the beverage space, but non-liquor related. So I've had some inquiries about
I'm currently drinking a cold brew ale.
Oh, all right.
It
was brewed cold?
Yeah, speaking of Texas, it's Scheinerbach. It's... They pair I think it's Chameleon that they paired with.
Oh, okay.
To do a cold brew coffee ale.
Oh, nice. I have not heard of that one yet. Yeah, I think they're based in Austin, right? Or something like that?
I think so. Somewhere around there.
Okay. Or Shiner, yeah, actually Shiner, Texas is probably where they're from. That makes sense.
Yeah, that would probably make more sense.
Yeah. So. And then other than that, I kind of want to take on a few more like personal projects. I'm looking I didn't want to say too much about it like in general, just because I don't like to say anything until it's like getting and going, but it started to move now. And I've been wanting to launch my own spirit for a while. So,
oh, awesome.
Yeah. So we're going to see what happens there. I have all the, you know, I've done it for so many other people. I want to try that myself. So
you certainly have the connections to get that rolling.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. So I think I know it will probably be a gin. That's as far as as much as I can say right now.
that is my summer liquor of choice.
Yes. I love a good gin and water. It's not very exciting.
Gin and water.
It doesn't have a lot of flavor to it, but it keeps you hydrated and makes you a little tipsy. So it does the job while not giving you a headache.
I'm a big fan of the gin and tonic, and I like mixing gin with a few other things every once in a while.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And then some projects that are coming out soon just this year I have two projects for Jack Daniels coming out. So that's something I'm super pumped about. And, yeah, those will be out this year sometime.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. So, you know, where can people find you online? As you mentioned, Instagram is your main place.
Instagram. Instagram, I think it's Chad Michael Studio. And I think for Twitter, even though I don't use it really, I think it's also Chad Michael at Chad Michael Studio. And I think website is, I feel like I shouldn't have named it after myself, but ChadMichaelStudio.com is the URL. So, maybe just better just to Google Chad Michael Studio, and then you can see all the different.
Just make sure that you don't leave it at just Chad Michael. Otherwise, Chad Michael Murray will pop up.
Yes. Yep. And there's also a Chad Michaels with an S that I figured out. She is a drag queen. So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So don't type in Chad Michaels. You got to add studio after it, or you're going to get a whole slew of different people.
Wow. I missed that one. Yeah. The Chad Michael Murray I found real quick.
Yes.
Yeah. Which made me laugh because I should have known that was going to pop up.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, we're going to link to all that stuff in the show notes as well.
Great, man.
So I appreciate you taking the time to talk with me tonight.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. It was nice meeting you.
Yeah. It was nice meeting you as well.
Cool.
So we end every episode by saying, go out and hug some necks.
Okay.
Which is kind of a way of saying, go out, meet new people, don't be a stranger and all.
Right.
Would you mind taking us out by saying that?
No problem. Go out and hug some necks.
Perfect.
I said it with a little Texas flair. So.
I know, it's a Southern thing. Thanks, Chad.
You're quite welcome, man. Have a good one.
You too. You can find out more about Chad on Instagram at Chad Michael Studio, and be sure to check out the links in the show notes for more ways to keep up with him. You can keep up with the podcast on Twitter and Facebook at Creative SO Pod, and follow Creative South on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Creative South GA, or over at creativesouth.com. And I'm at Jay Frostholm on Dribbble, Twitter, and Instagram. Visit jackprince.com and get 25% off all orders over $25 when you use promo code CreateSouth17 at checkout. For a limited time, new Skillshare customers can get their first 3 months for just 99 cents to get unlimited access to thousands of classes when you sign up at Skillshare.com using promo code CreativeSouth. What are you waiting for? Start learning today. And remember, if you like the show, help support us over at Patreon.com/CreativeSouth. And if you like the Creative South podcast, head over to iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play Music. Rate us and leave a review. This helps more people find the podcast and allows us to keep getting awesome guests. Now go out and hug some necks.